Everyone, my humble pranam to our guest, Jeffrey Armstrong, and each one of you here. Today is day six of our 6 days of speaker series, and we welcome our viewers on the Facebook as well as Zoom. It gives me tremendous joy and privilege to welcome Jeffrey Armstrong, and I'll formally introduce him after the invocation. So request you to join for the invocation, bringing your hands at the heart center. This is the invocation to Sage Patanjali. Our topic today is well-being rooted in eight limbs of yoga, given to us by Sage Patanjali. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi abahu purushakaram Shankha Chakrasi Dharinam Sahastra Shirsam Shvetam Pranamami Patanjalim Hari Om. So, Jeffrey Armstrong, his monkhood name is also Kavindra Rishi. Founder of VASA, Vedic Academy of Science and Arts, is a Vedic scholar, international speaker, and a linguist, is an award-winning poet and best-selling author of numerous books. Though born a Westerner, Kavindra Rishi has dedicated most of his adult life to learning about, practicing, and teaching Vedic wisdom. At age 50, he left the corporate world and took a vow to dedicate rest of his life to only teaching the Vedic knowledge. He has worked with prominent Indian organizations to help with the revival of Sanatan Dharma culture by teaching at youth camps, universities, civic centers throughout India, America, and Europe. He is a co-chairman of Vedic Friends Association and is active with the British Board of Dharmic Scholars. He has been featured in the CBC documentary Planet Yoga, the Leo Award-winning documentary Take Back Your Power, Wings of Yoga, and two documentaries on Ayurveda and psychology of Mind Valley. He has degrees in psychology, English literature, and history and comparative religion, and spent 5 years in an ashram as a brahmachari, which is monk. He and his wife live in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. So we welcome Jeffrey, and I hand it over to you.
Thank you so much, Etel. That was very beautiful. Your chanting is quite lovely. I thought I was in Bharat for a moment. Probably I was. And to everyone, namaste. So good to be with you and to see you all. It's such a bright and beautiful world, this ever-growing group of yoga practitioners throughout the world. I often think about it as something that just happened to us. So since we are in the middle of a difficult time in history, my response has been, yes, I understand, because yoga is known as Vedavid 108. If you're not careful, you'll catch it, but you'll always be glad you did. So where we begin, where I always begin, so that I give the proper tribute to the gurus of Bharat, is Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo, Maheshwara, Guru Sakshad, Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It's important for all of us to be grateful practitioners of this great legacy that has been passed down from the Vedic civilization, especially because India, Bharat, has been so abused through colonization and now is still in a chaotic recovery from that. It's very important that those of us who have received yoga always praise the source of it and be clear that we're the recipients of it and that that is a great gift and honor for us. That's showing of our gratitude. And also it's the correct yogic attitude. It's not something new, but something we especially should do to always make it be clear to everyone that this is a gift. My little joke about it is that after the British had taken just about everything that wasn't nailed down from India, then the gurus of India in the 60s, when I was growing up, came running over and said, wait, you forgot the really good stuff. You just took the junk. You didn't take the crown jewels. Here, let us give you mantras. Let us give you yoga. And I was there with my arms open saying, something's wrong in this civilization. I know it is. And of course, it was. We weren't a namaste civilization. So yoga begins and ends here. That yoga views all of us as an immortal being. And as such, as the Atma, we are, if you will, an atomic particle of Brahman. Hence the saying, Aham Brahmasmi. What I really am is an immortal being, an effulgent, radiant, immortal being who is visiting the realm of matter, Prakriti. I chose to come here. I didn't come here because I was naughty or bad or evil. And I've gone on this adventure like the rest of you. So the first thing I do is I offer my respect to everyone around me. The second thing is I very subtly say to them, I live a lifestyle that's all about balance. So I'm as user-friendly as a human can get. This is where I stand. So we're saying balance without even saying. And we're saying that we're going to be respectful. And so the next word we need, isn't it, is dharmic. Please don't equate dharma with religion. They're both separate words with their own meaning. Religion is Reli Gari. It means a book of rules, ideally divine rules. And I applaud that wherever I see it. If the people with the rule book behave divinely, then I'm convinced. If they don't, well, then it's not so meaningful, is it? Got to walk your talk. So now for us, dharma doesn't mean a book of rules exactly. It's like that, but it's more subtle. It is that everything around us here within Prakriti is being conducted purposefully by the rules of nature. And they're called the ritam, R-I-T-A-M in Sanskrit. That ritam is the invisible but ever-present sequences that are the way that matter gets things done. If we don't cooperate with Prakriti, with those rules within nature, then we start to disrupt through our actions. Now, the principle is cause and effect. It's really incorrect. I think you may or may not know I'm also a Jyotishi. I'm a practitioner for the last 50 years of Vedic astrology. And so many people think that karma is punishment, but it's not. It's cause and effect. The nature of Prakriti, of this realm we're in, is that whatever we do puts something in motion, which then goes around and comes around. And that goes around, comes around is the principle. The reason I'm starting here for our discussion of yoga is that I'm convinced that, of course, first of all, yogis all began their learning with that understanding because they've been told that since they were children. By the time they started doing yoga, they were already the Atma and not the clothing they're wearing, not the covering of the body. But step by step, there's a science that accompanies yoga, which is called Samkhya. And Samkhya is the more we know about the categories of matter, especially the very obvious ones that we're made out of, that this form is made out of. The more we know about that, the more cooperative we can be with. So the laws of nature, or Samkhya, or Jnana Yoga, is part of the training of all yogis, because it's necessary to know the difference between our Atma and Prakriti. And then it's necessary to know the categories of Prakriti in order to cooperate with. I'm of the opinion that the reason the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali was the first yoga to truly sweep the world is that it's truly like a missing vitamin. Almost everyone in our modern world has not embodied correctly. They came into a body, but they weren't greeted properly. When they were old enough to know, somebody didn't say namaste, you're an immortal being. That's your car, karana in Sanskrit. That's the car you're driving. That's not you. That's just like the clothes we wear. That's your covering. Take good care of it, but it's not you. So don't be confused by the color of skin. Don't be confused by the apparent differences. Animals are atmas. Every living entity is an atma. In fact, this is a school. So I like to play with English because I'm a poet. So I call the universe the university. I believe it's very helpful to know that we're in a curriculum. Now, the Sanskrit for that, and here's a lovely transition from Sanskrit to Greek to Latin to English. The Sanskrit for what class, what grade we're in this lifetime is Adhikari. Adhikari became, it went over into Greek, and then it moved over into English. So Adhikari in Greek became Edukari. Here in Sanskrit, it means the grade you're in the evolutionary process of moving through the journey within Prakriti, within matter. The Greeks said, bringing out what is inside. Close, but not quite. So the meaning is drifting a little. And then education, as we use it now, pretty much means piling information on top of someone without knowing who they are. Many Sanskrit words have made their way into English. And I'm making a little commercial for something that's very important. The more you can use Sanskrit words, the more you can softly and respectfully reprogram the world. I'd like you to think of yourself as yogis, as reprogramming both yourself and your conception of self and that of the world. But the soft way is to say to someone, if you don't mind, I'm going to use a word. So I was using a word and haven't defined it yet, dharma. All Sanskrit words have roots. The root of dharma is dri. The root of dri is ri. And remember I said ritam? There's a ri in ritam. The same ri is in dharma. And it's also there in kri of karma. Because all of these Sanskrit words are actually unique and they don't have English equivalents. So please understand that and start using the Sanskrit words wherever you can introduce them. Because you're slowly, subtly helping everyone reprogram themselves. Because English does not have words that mean the same thing. So there's not an equivalent English word for dharma. So now, if ritam is the laws of nature and kri and karma is the laws of nature, that every action has an equal and opposite reaction, then dri, the root of dharma, means knowing the laws of nature and using everything according to those laws, cooperating. A dharmic anything is when you cooperate with the laws of nature of the particular thing that you're handling and interacting with. That's called dharmic. So the word dharma is used in two ways. The unique vehicle that we're all driving in. So isn't it, look at us, we're each in a unique vehicle with different natures, physiologies, abilities, tendencies. We would score differently on tests. So obviously we're driving different make and model of what? Karana. This is the karana. This is where the English word car came from. Isn't that fun? This is the karana. The dream body, when you let this one sleep on the bed at night, that we take off in and go have adventures, that's the anta karana. Antar is the same as the English word. It gave us the word, English word enter or inner. So antakarana is the inner car. And this is the outer car. And the driver is the atma. Right now, we're doing yoga. Because these distinctions are what we'll then meditate upon. Before these distinctions, if I said, go inside yourself, first of all, you'd be confused that this was you. But it's not yourself. So how can yourself go inside yourself? Ah, but if I say, now you're the Atma, now pull away a little bit from your Karana and your Antakarana. Now see your Atma, the shining consciousness that's inside your Karana and Antakarana. So now, because I don't want to leave Patanjali out of this, that's the introduction to the first four verses of Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And the first verse says, Atta Yoga Anushasana. Now, this is very interesting because the Atta does not mean now. It means now that your guru says you're ready. And that's what I was saying at the beginning, that interestingly enough, the gurus of Bharat came to the West and green-lighted yoga because they knew we were in emergency time. So they said, okay, everybody, go for it. Yoga, green light. And they initiated the whole civilization through the Beatles. I was there. My sweet Lord, my sweet Lord, I really want to know you. All of a sudden, right in the middle of a matrix of chaos, they dropped yoga in. So let's do the next of the first verses of Patanjali. The first one says, now let's do yoga, now that you're ready. That's your adhikari. That's what the guru is looking to find out. Is this student adhikari yet? And then which part of yoga they'll start with depends upon their degree of adhikari. But basically they'll start with yams and niyams, won't they? They'll start with their lifestyle practices. And this is the missing secret ingredient in our Western civilization embracing yoga. I got to tell you, I got kinfolk from Waco, Texas. That's where my grandfather came from. So Texas yoga makes me laugh. I mean, you just wouldn't have thought that thought when I was growing up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I rode and trained horses most of my life. And my grandfather was a cavalry sergeant in World War I for Waco, Texas. And, you know, so I know how to speak Texan a little bit. Tex-Mex, como esta usted, señor, como se llama. I mean to say, yoga has gone to unusual places. You can't imagine how much fun it is for me to do a yoga festival for Texas. So my point being that the time and place of this and the adhikari of the students is something that each guru would look at very carefully and guide them along according to their nature and start them with what they're best at so that they get a positive response. But the context of teaching Ashtanga yoga would have been that everyone was in that civilization. So they probably had been learning since they were children, asana. And then, of course, if someone got upset, you would show them pranayama, wouldn't you? May I show you a lovely pranayama technique that I just learned? Because this body, I think you probably figured it out by now, but I'll be 75 this coming December. In this body, that is to say. And so there is a certain aging and entropy that takes place. So one practice of pranayama is when your body gets older, it makes more waste in any moment. There are more waste byproducts to be gotten rid of. So one pranayama technique is to breathe in, count of four. Hold count of four. Release count of eight. Because this way I get in the habit of exhaling more of the broken down materials that aging is leaving in the hallways of my, shall we call it a body, or shall we call it what the yogis call it? Navadvari Pura. Nine Dvari doors, Pura, the city with nine doors or gates. There's more garbage in the streets and a 74-year-old, no matter how well they're living, than a 24-year-old, given the same diet and lifestyle. So that one little skillful technique is marvelous, because you're just breathing out a little bit more of that. You're just responding appropriately to the Svadharma moment. You are all studying these various techniques, so I'm not going to spend much time in sharing them, because I think I can give a perspective that's more valuable for everyone. But one of the marvelous things is when you meet a yogi, the first thing you do after this is say, Swamiji, would you be kind enough to teach me something that I don't know? I'd be so grateful. I'm sure you know something I don't know. So this is the other thing that accompanies Vedic knowing. The Veda is a library. I've made up another term for this. The people who have a religion, I have a degree in history and comparative religion. I studied their books. I read them with respect and appreciation. Born a Christian, they never hurt me. They hurt other people, I'm sorry to say, but they didn't ever hurt me. So I just walked away from them saying, you just couldn't answer my questions, but I like you. You were user-friendly. Most people who are religionists are user-friendly, so we don't want to hurt their feelings. But the thing is, to me, there wasn't enough. So I call them people of a book. If they're Jewish, people of four books, to be precise. But I call the Vedic culture the people of a library. And it just so happens that that library is written in the most perfect language on the planet. And there's no intelligent person on the planet that can deny that. Sanskrit means Sanskritam, the perfected language. It's a programming language for yogis. That's what it is. It's not an everyday language. It wasn't made out in the street somewhere. It was purposely constructed so that it doesn't alter its meaning over time. Did you hear that? Sanskritam does not alter its meaning over time. Not its pronunciation, not its root, not its meaning. It is the programming language of the university. So the atmas can move from grade to grade graciously. And so the message of who they really are can reach them generation after generation after generation without being degraded by being passed around. The truth is, most European languages are Sanskrit. I'll give you a quick example. The word Russia comes from the word Rishi. Sanskrit Rishi, which means a seer. The word Scandinavia comes from Skanda, the son of Shiva. Ganesha is his brother. The word Ireland is from Aryan, and Aryan means the people who are seeking their own best interest and the best interest of all beings and trying to regain their true nature. So this knowledge has been traveling up and down the Silk Road for a very long time. But we are right now in a yoga renaissance. This yoga renaissance means try to find as many interesting teachers as you can, number one, and learn all the different departments of the yoga. So, but let's follow Patanjali too. So the first sutra, Atta, yoga, Anushasanam. The second sutra is the secret. Yogas Chit Vritti Niroda. Write that on your mirror if you don't know it by heart, because that's yoga. You can leave now. If you really get it, that's yoga. But let me just share, because I'm a poet, there's a saying I've always thought was very interesting. And when you're talking to somebody and they're getting upset, in English you say, don't get your knickers in a twist. Now that's British. I say, don't get your knickers in a twist now. Knickers is underwear. Ah, but our antakarana is our underwear, isn't it? You see? So a twist, what has twist got to do with? Yogas, chit, vritti is vortex, which means let's twist again like we did last summer, according to Chubby Chucker. Let's twist out all of our vrittis, he thought. I'm from Detroit. So yogas, chit, well, I guess chit happens, right? All the time. Because what? Because Atma is manifest as chit, awareness, sat, it's immortal, chit, it's conscious, ananda, it's ecstatically joyful by nature, and vigraha, it's an individual, or we wouldn't be individualized. So then yogas, chit, vritti, nirodha, one more word. Guess what the root chit, vrit, guess where it went? Well, lots of places, but the one you wouldn't have suspected is, you ready? Advertising. Advert, as they call them in England. I say, did you read that advert? Vert and vrit are exactly the same word. The purpose of advertising is to twist your consciousness and force you to buy the product. This used to be called black magic. Now it's called advertising. This is Ronald McDonald getting the attention of billions of children to force them to eat dead cow in a stale, useless bun with French fries whose flavor comes from perfume made in France. That's disgusting. Yogas, chit, advertisement, nirodha. Yoga removes all the commercial messages from your chit, from your atma. It untwists your knickers. It teaches you how to untwist yourself all the time. And that is the most important thing you can remember about yoga. What is it that's twisting us? Well, it's called, it even sounds the same, it's called orbits. In the material world, you see everything is cyclic. Goes around, comes around. Ooh, that's karma, right? Goes around, comes around. What are the nine planets called in Sanskrit? The nine grahas. What do? They grahab you. They grasp you. What English word came from that? Gravity. Gravity. And grave. Because the grave grabs you. It always confuses me when people are in the grave in a nice polyester suit with formaldehyde in their veins, waiting for what? I don't think that makes much sense. But here, look. So this yoga's chit, vritti nirodha, what happens if you take all that twistedness off? You know, your DNA. Isn't it double helix? Isn't that called twisted? Isn't your DNA twisted? Uh-huh. And what could be twisted in you that you're unconscious of? Your ancestors. Yoga says that your ancestors are still connected to you. Why? Because you owe them, because they made your body. There's a direct link between yourself and your ancestors. So I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but if you go inside your body, and get real quiet and listen in the hallways, you'll hear your ancestors singing. Na, 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 na. My mother did this and my father did this. That's why I'm the way I am. Da, 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 da. That's my justification for my insanity. I'm like mom and dad. I'm like grandpa and gramps. Runs in the family. It's twisted in our genes. Yogas, chit. Oh, we're about to throw the caste system out the window. Why? Because we're not the body, we're not the skin, We're none of those things. We're not the gender. We're not the genital. Wait a minute. We're the Atma, really. I'm beginning to see it, to get a glimpse. So third verse of Patanjali. And this, I'm telling you a secret. The first four verses of Vedic texts often summarize the whole text. So we're on verse three now. What happens when you get rid of all of your twistedness? You're going to enjoy this. Ever been to the circus? And the ringmaster says, and the lights are flashing down on the center of the center stage in the tent. And it goes, tada, drastu, svarupe, avastanam. That's circus talk for. Tada, which came into English from Sanskrit and exactly means now revealed before us. Third verse of Patanjali. Ta-da! He's telling you the whole story. Now you're just about to get Brahman realization. You're just about to get all the veils fall off your eyes and no longer be your shirt or your skin or anything or your ideas or your DNA or your RNA. Ta-da! Drashtu. Dristi. Now you can see sva, one's own, rupe, form, avastanam, residing within the karana. At the center ring, in the middle of this karana, unobscured by the manas, by the thinking, feeling, willing, and memory, at this moment, the Atma in its true form or rupa becomes visible to the practitioner because they've removed all the vrittis that were twisted around it. That's what tantra means, you know, to weave. The fabric has a certain tension. This shirt couldn't be a shirt without staying in the same tension. The English word tension came from the Sanskrit tantra. The tantra of this shirt is to stay woven together. Even though they're pulling on each other, it looks good anyway. But they're having a tug of war, and that's called a shirt. Our body is a tug of war of cause and effect, and DNA causing a body. And it's been twisted around us. So when our yoga finally works, ta-da, drastu, now the Atma can see themselves, sva, himself, rupe, the true form, and not the material form of themselves. Now they see their Atma. Avastanam, and they reside there. Actually, vas is an interesting word. It means dress, fragrance, and residence. So now they smell the fragrance of their Atma. Now they take off all their dresses and clothing and costume, and they're nakedly available as the Atma, which isn't naked because it's an Atma. And this is our new residence. We now stay there and live there and say, Aham Brahmasmi. I am none of those coverings. I'm not the doshas. I'm not the gunas. I'm not the elements. And now back to our city of nine gates, if we may. At the center of the city of nine gates, we, long ago deposed, are the servant of, I like to call it, Quasimodo. No offense to anyone whose body is twisted, but a famous character in literature, and I call Ahamkara Quasimodo. Yes, master, you are wonderful, master. You are also material, master. You are made of matter. You are matter. It is exactly you. This is your empire. Love it, master. You are material. Don't call it ego. Ego is Latin for I. It's the misidentification of I with Prakriti. Ahamkara is the most subtle material energy. When our Atma passes through it, it's so subtle we've been spray painted and we now think we're matter. That's called ahamkara. Aham brahmasmi removes ahamkara. That is the goal of yoga. In all its forms. And then the next verse. This is Pada 1, Sutra 4. Vritti svarupyam itarastra. Vritti svarupam itarastra. If you don't see that at all other times, itaratra, day after day and night after night, ratri is night. Iti is again and again. Again and again, night after night, day after day. If you don't see your true self, you will go back to your ahamkara self. If you don't go back to being the atma and stay there, then you will go back to being run by Quasimodo. You're a material master, you're a crippled master, you are this master, you are that master. You are defined by your matter master, or you will master your matter. Huh. So the city of nine gates, the Navadvarapura, this is mentioned in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse 13 and 14, as the Navadvarapura. This is the city of nine gates. As far as my fingers reach to my center, that's what I'm in charge of, nothing else. I only own that space. And therefore, yoga starts us in working with all the different parts, which we know of from the Samkhya yoga. We usually learn the both yogas at the same time, together, companioning with each other. All right, well, we're almost there. Five more minutes. There's a verse in Pada 2, Sutra 1 of Patanjali that summarizes the entire thing, so we can't miss it. Okay. That verse says, tapasya svadhyaya ishvara pranidhan kriya yoga ha. Yoga consists of three activities. Tapasya, svadhyaya, and ishvara pranidhan. Simply put, no pain, no gain. Tapasya, by the way, is not austerity. The English word austerity is from auster, which means hot southern breezes. It gave us the word Australia. But that's only part of the truth of tapa. Tap gives us the word pitta. Pitta is the pitta or fire dosha. Tapasya means using the fire of your being to melt down your being so it can be reshaped in a higher image. It's like wax and you melt it. Often the rishis describe our manas as like wax because it becomes like, did I make a good impression? It takes impressions, it's impressionable, and then we get stuck with those impressions and we call that self. But this verse says tapasya, you have to do something just correctly. And so you also have a guru to give you the just right tapasya, the just right way to do each thing. Then when you know it's just right, now this is what we call in English, practice. Practice makes siddhi. Practice makes perfect. Tapasya, svadhyaya. We've got to move fast, so I'm going to stay on time. True self-knowing, true awareness of ourself as the atma, svadhyaya. And all the layers that are covering us and able to talk about them, point to them, work with them, and be at home within them without being them. Finally, a great area of confusion, Ishvara Pranidhan. Boy, the missionaries messed this one. I'm just going to tell you one thing first because I'm a linguist. You ready? the word God, if I asked you, you'd tell me something that's not as much fun as I'm going to tell you. If I said, what does God mean? And you go, this. You wouldn't listen to the dictionary. You would make something up. That's not English, by the way, or any language. You have to go to the dictionary. If you go to the dictionary and go to an etymological dictionary, it'll tell you that word God came into English through Dutch, where it's gut, through German, where it's gutam. And that word came from the Sanskrit hutam, H-U-T-A-M, which occurs four times in the Bhagavad Gita. Hutam is the smoke arising from the offering placed in the fire. I know it. There we go. Can you hear me now? Okay, that was my computer blipping. Of a pagan sacrifice. So once again, when you make a fire, an agni, put food in it, say thanks to the divines for the food, the smoke rises up. That's called hutam. Hutam became gutam in German, gut in Dutch, and God in English. The Christian word for the supreme being is a Sanskrit word for the pagan sacrifice that they say is horrible. You should be laughing. That's funny. Their only word for the supreme being is a word that is mentioned four times in the Gita, but it's Brahmarpanam, Brahma Agnal, Brahma Hutam. There you go. Ishvara Pranidhan means there's a whole gradient of divine beings that are making life possible. If this is a university, just think there's all the professors, all the people cleaning up the campus, all the people that cook in the cafeteria. These are called the devas or the ishas or the ishtas or your idols or your, like in a film, your idols, beings you look up to. They are the devas from which the word divine comes. We're supposed to make friends with them. They are not the final and ultimate destination, and they never said so. Only outsiders misunderstood them. They're our friends and they're our cousins. I'll tell you, I got cousins in Texas. And even though they're from Texas, they're still friends of mine. So I have devas who are my cousins. I chant to them all the time because I'm grateful that they gave me dinner. In the Isha Upanishad, it says, Kurvan evaha karmani jijivi sheksha tamsamaha. If you do this, if you reciprocate with the devas in everything you do, you'll live to be 100 and get no karma. Ishvara Pranidhan culminates finally in our relationship with Bhagavan, Bhagavati, the male and female divine, with Brahma Saraswati, with Shiva Durga, with Vishnu Lakshmi. And you will not ever find yourself alone with a male being. You will find yourselves with cosmic mom and dad. If I had more time, I'd continue. But I said we'd leave 15 minutes for Q&A. Thanks for listening. And may this knowledge live in your heart always. May you always remember it and never forget it. And thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, Jeffrey. We welcome all the questions. So if you have any questions, you can type it in the chat box.
Which I can't see, so you'll read them to me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So far, we have all the things shared by Sandy. So it's good. I don't see any questions yet.
Jeffrey, this is Maggie here in San Antonio. I don't know if you can see me, but I thoroughly enjoyed this and I enjoyed your jokes. And you really do a great accent there. So thank you for sharing that. And as a linguist, I would love to get your interpretation of some of the Greek and Roman words that are now coming into vogue with a lot of peak performance coaching and books. Like we're talking about hedonic happiness, eudaimonia, and RT. Can you like bring those back? Where can we find those? I'm sure there's a root in Sanskrit. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I've been thinking about those words and where they might come from.
Well, you've chosen some that I'm not aware of. And that's the way linguistics is. You can only hold so many words in your cranium, especially on four languages.
Yes.
But I will tell you a fun one. And that is that the word student is actually studianta. Mm-hmm. It's one who knows where the studi is taking us.
Mm-hmm.
So that is another example of a fun word. Now, for what you asked, I want to tell you a grim one, but an interesting one really quickly. And it's persona non grata. Mm-hmm. If you think you know that as someone not welcome in my social group, I have some bad news. It was the colonizing term when people went around the world, essentially with the permission of the Pope, and said, if you aren't Christian, you only appear to be human. You're not really human. Persona non grata was the Latin used to describe the beings about to be enslaved and colonized. And terra nullius was the name for their property, which could be taken because it didn't belong to a Christian. So just to add a grim but important note, there is a lot of Latin that's been used to our detriment. A lot of it that's interesting and fun as a linguist. And a lot of Sanskrit words in English, my favorite is doctor, duktara, one who takes away your duke. Great question. Put up your dukes.
If I can just share one of the words, because it really speaks to the difference between how we relate to the five senses. So hedonic happiness is how you experience life, our satisfaction with all of the, what we're eating, all of the temporary aspects of feeling happiness in the temporary time. But eudaimonia comes from EU, which means good, and then daimon, which is translated as soul. So good soul. And so I look at that as the stuff we eat, almost like the fat that is more nourishing and maybe comes from our inner soul instead of our five senses. So I've just been playing with that, and you're a linguist, so I thought I would throw that out and maybe we can chat later about it.
Sure. Well, I'll throw you one back, and that is that heathen is from heath, the people living in the heath, and so is pagan, which is those living out in the country who adore Bhagavan. And Bhagavan means that being, that supreme being, who has six characteristics to an unlimited degree that are desirable to everyone. That's one of the meanings, van, who possesses. But Bhagavan also means the supreme being who doesn't care about all those things and would rather be in Vrindavan, in the forest with the gopis. So we are pagans and we are heathens. And therefore our heathen worldview is all a part of our yoga.
Ishvara. Thank you so much. Thank Arida. You so much.
Thank you. Great question.
Okay, so there was just one comment. I think you said there were four books that Jewish people have, but there are five books of Moses. So Helena has just put that comment.
I stand corrected. Yes, that's correct. But the point was, sometimes in the Judaic tradition, we're not talking about current books. It's before the printing press when the tradition got started. So actually, technically, the Judaic tradition cannot date itself any more than the Christian tradition can. Technically, from a scholastic perspective, they have no books, and neither does Christianity. What they have are rumors that came after their prophet and were eventually written down. In the case of Judaism, they have only 22 letters in the alphabet, and because they were so oppressed, they went oral with their tradition for a quite long period of time, which means it doesn't have the literacy that Sanskrit does. It doesn't mean we disrespect them or show them disrespect, but they, honestly speaking, do not have a literate tradition. Neither does Islam. There was at least a 50-year gap, because he was illiterate, between his receiving the messages from Allah and his someone writing them down for him because he couldn't write. So the three Abrahamic religions really don't have books at all. They have an oral tradition that was eventually written down. But Sanskritam has been written down extremely perfectly, and the entire language is perfect. I just didn't have time to launch into it, but thanks for inviting me into a subject we can talk about another time.
Thank you. And then there was a request, can we get a taste of your poetry? So if there is anything that you would like to share in terms of poetry, that was a request.
All right. Well, what an unusual request. Well, this is a Vedanta poem. And as you know, it's a chintya, which means chint is, you can't really cognize it here because Brahman is a chintya. So to talk about it in poetic forms is not easy, but this one is called The Scene, S-C-E-N-E, all puns intended whenever I say it. Well, when I saw you, see me, see you, I could see you saw me too. And though we saw the same thing, I still was me and you were you, although the thing we saw was common, it appeared as something new because we saw that seeing it was something both of us could do. I had not seen that you were seeing only what I saw, but seeing you was seeing something I had seen. This seemed to clear the whole thing up until we saw that we were being seen before we saw each other seeing. And now I saw that seeing was a scene set up by someone who was watching seeing, who would see that he could see, that what we saw was seen with sight and seeing, and that seer, sight and seeing make it three. The things were there to see before we saw them, which proves that someone always seeing saw, for even sight is made of sight and seeing. Thank you very much.
That was fabulous. Okay, and then someone said, wow, you have a young mind. And then,
I don't know if that's an insult or a compliment. I'll take it as a compliment, of course. Well, this is what I find, is that I do 2 hours of sadhana every morning, mantras, yoga, and daily practice. I live by the sattvic principles of being a yogi, no alcohol, no drugs, no nicotine, no nothing that's intoxicant, no meat. I'm a vegivore. So all of those things have kept me, I would like to think, young at 74. And therefore I attribute it especially to all of the yoga practices I've done for almost my entire life.
Very nice, very, very inspiring. And thank you for your presence and sharing that wisdom, and was very well received. I don't see any more questions, so I would hand it over to Sherry. So Jeffrey, if you don't mind, we're just gonna make a couple of announcements for our tomorrow's event.
Certainly. May I end with a mantra, or do we not have time?
We do have time, of course we have time.
All right. I just want to add one thing. The Ishvara Pranidhan is conducted by mantra and by names of the Supreme. So this one I'm very fond of. It says, Sri Ram Narayana Vasudeva Govinda Vaikuntha Mukunda Krishna Sri Keshava Ananta Nasringa Vishnu Mantra hi samsara bhujanga dashtam. We call out to each of those aspects of the ultimate divine, which are each flavors and angles and moods of love and appreciation. And at the end it says, please help me. I'm being held in the coils of an anaconda called time, and I can't get out without your help. Mantra hi samsara bhujangadashta, our mood of appreciation and gratitude. And I'm so grateful to be sharing this with you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hatal. Sorry, Jeffrey, if you wouldn't mind sharing with those who are new to your work, where they can follow you, learn about your future programs.
May I just do a little commercial? Most recently, as a linguist, I wanted to be of service to the Vedic culture. So this, the Bhagavad Gita Comes Alive, was just printed this year. And what I've done is taken out all the colonizing words like Lord and God and sin and angel and all that, which really should never have been there. They're just the collateral damage from the colonial era. And then I left about 100 or so Sanskrit words in the verses so that the reader would need to get a vocabulary of Sanskrit because there's no English substitutes. And then I clarified the English so the misleading English words, for example, spiritual is Greek and it means spiritus, to breathe. When someone tells me they're spiritual, I say, I'm glad you're breathing, but I still don't know what you mean. So spiritual is a useless word for conveying meaning because it only means to breathe. It could mean pranayama, and I said, good, I'm glad you like pranayama. I still don't know what you mean. So I took those out of the Gita and I took purports out. I didn't explain it. So it's just 701 verses, clear, decolonized. And that's why we called it a radical translation, because it's a wonderful companion. You can read through a chapter in a few minutes out loud to yourself. You really hear it. And I am doing a class every Wednesday night here in Vancouver at 7 o'clock. I think we just finished our 34th or 33rd class. And we're starting on chapter 15 next week. And those classes are available if you link in at GitaComesAlive.com. Thank you for that moment to speak. And that's the most important work that we're doing right now.
Good. Yes, Sherry.